Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 114. This is Kevin DeFrango, seated to my left in a unfamiliar room. To me.
Yes.
Not so much to you. Ken Phillips, who's usually sleeps in this room.
That's right. We're in my bedroom. We have some other house guests at the moment, and we're trying out a new space here. This is our first time recording in this particular area of the house, so if you notice any sound differences, that could be what is causing that. So yes, hopefully it's still going to work out okay, and I think it is. We actually have a little couch with a bench here that we're using to kind of hold our laptops, so we are not snuggled together in bed or anything like that.
Yeah, just in case those OPA listeners out there get anything weird stuck in their head.
This was not a ruse to get Kevin into my bedroom. I can understand, but just wanted to quash that rumor. Lots of rumors flying around these days, Kevin.
Yeah, a lot of crazy rumors.
Indeed.
Oh, man. Well, one could say that one of the stories that we did in OPA number 37 about the death of Sony's robot dog was, a premature demise situation.
Maybe that was a rumor, Kevin.
Oh, that was a rumor. I had my own through and I forgot what word we were using.
That's all right. No, Kevin, that's right. At the time, we did report that this dog was the end of life cycle for the whole product, I guess.
Yeah, because I remember people having them repaired by, like, specialists just to continue to keep them alive because Sony had ceased working on them.
Yeah, there were still companies that were able to gather and source the parts and make the repairs on those robots because they were apparently well-beloved by at least a certain segment of the population.
Yeah, so Sony has come in to put salve on their wounds, and they're coming up with a new AIBO, I guess you could say. It's A-I-B-O.
That looks right. Sounds right to me there, Kevin.
Yeah, so yeah, and it's going to be $2,900 for this dog. Well, and yes.
It's a robot dog.
Yeah, this robot dog. And is it bad that I thought to myself, I know for sure I've spent more than $2,900 on my dog?
Yeah, I think
like they in this article they made it sound like it was a large expense, and that's all I was sitting there thinking to myself. I'm like, oh my god, I know that I've bought heart meds for Kia that pile up to more than $2,900.
Well, and, you know, you don't have to buy food for this dog either, which is...
oh, yeah, which is an expense all by itself. Not sure that it equals out the...
Right.
$2,900 over Kia's lifetime specifically. Probably Cayenne's, just because he ate twice as much.
It does add up over time.
Right.
And then when you add on medical expenses, of course, it skyrockets. Now, that's not to say, I guess, Kevin, that this dog wouldn't require, say, mechanical repairs at certain points.
This is true.
So that could be, I guess, you could
bring
still
be the expense chart, balance it out a little bit more than I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm. And also to perhaps go on the other, to walk back a little bit what I said, you don't have to pay to feed this dog, but you do have to pay, it seems like, to keep its connectivity up so it can keep getting updates, to feed its machine brain, I guess, Kevin.
Yeah, and you've really got to keep this thing plugged in for quite a bit of time. Because I believe it needs a full, is it a 6 or 8 hour cycle to recharge.
Elon Musk would hate this dog. He would really be calling this dog all sorts of names. So, yeah. Famously doesn't like to sleep much. But, yeah, so they're saying that this would... you can pay for an additional package to cover repairs for $475. So that would probably... I mean, you add that on to the cost of the original price tag for the dog, you're still looking at like $3,300 maybe, $3,400.
I would imagine that... and plus, you know, it is something that's electronic, and I can't seem to find the numbers there about how long that takes to charge, but I felt like it was a while.
Okay, I'm sorry. They were adding in this price already for the 3-year online plan, which is roughly $800. You add that to the price of the dog itself is $1,730. And then that's how you get the total that they're talking about, makes sense. I mean, it sounds like you're forced to pay for this, and the dog has a SIM card in it. So it can stay connected to the network at all times. It's pretty wild, Kevin.
This is, this one certainly, I think all the stories we do with robots in them, like even just within the time that we've started covering them, like this one looks far more realistic in its mannerisms than the other one.
Yeah.
I guess I could understand getting attached to this a little bit more, but it's still not. I will always think that there's a difference between, at least for our lifetimes, more than likely, a difference between a robo-anything and a real real equivalent of that anything, whether it's a dog or a human.
Yeah, I mean...
you know, there's something that's maybe not quantifiable... per se, you know, even I kind of let off with the whole money thing. Like, there's an attachment to Kia that I don't think I could ever have to, you know, a virtual pet in a lot of ways. Like, it's not virtual because it is there, but it's not really a pet. Like, even if it learns from you, and because I think I was reading that it was supposed to be able to sympathize with you and be able to tell what your mood was.
Yes, that was one of the things that they mentioned here. It was supposed to be able to tell your mood and kind of react accordingly. So, like, not to bother you if you needed time to be by yourself.
Yeah, it was only a 2-hour playtime.
Yeah.
And you've got to charge it after that.
But, I mean, do you want to play with your dog for more than 2 hours?
No.
I think that's would probably go...
Look, and I will say that, A, maybe you don't want to, but B, you end up having to do that, especially in the younger days of animaldom, at least in my experience.
Right. Yes. Yeah, they like a lot of activity when they're younger.
Yeah, so it certainly probably requires more than 2 hours then. Now it requires less than 2 hours of activity.
Yeah, and I think you're probably fine without having to do more than that. More than 2 hours worth of activity.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. The amount of walking that I did when they were young was pretty bonkers.
Yeah.
I mean, there would be something about, and I guess there's a different situation too, you know, whether there are children involved in this. I guess I'm looking at it from the childless perspective. You know, I don't know how, you know, maybe a child would react to something like this. I don't know if they'd like it more than... a real dog, or maybe people have allergies. I mean, that is certainly a problem within my own family, really.
I mean, it would be
allergies.
Yeah, I could see it being an ideal kind of situation for a kid with allergies. Obviously, this dog doesn't shed. Some of the other benefits over a regular dog, Kevin, we mentioned the always on cellular connection. Normal dogs can't do that. it also has a...
no, they cannot do math for
that,
you.
That we know of. They, they have also, instead of a nose, a camera there. So they could be like monitoring your house while you're away, and even like it's apparently able to know to learn your layout of the house and kind of what the different rooms are called.
Oh, so you yeah,
could, like, get it to go from room to room and kind of check on things.
Yeah, it maps the house, and yeah, you can use it as a literal watchdog. So that would be, it'd actually be kind of crazy to have a real dog and this dog just running around using your security camera. I mean, it certainly seems pretty effective as one. The way I have the house set up currently for the cats, I would hope I could get that thing to jump up onto the crate so that it could look out the window upstairs. It'd be great to overlook the neighborhood, just, Keep the doggy cam up there.
Yeah, that's a good question about how nimble this thing is, because I'm not sure if we've seen any footage of it like jumping up onto like a raised platform or anything like that.
Even taking stairs.
Or taking stairs even. I don't think we have it. No.
No.
I don't think that showed up in any of the videos.
It still looks a little stiff in that department. I know that we've definitely seen some robots that are more than capable of tackling a set of stairs. This just the way the joints look and are bending, it makes it a little questionable, in my opinion.
So I don't know. I mean, we're talking about early days of robotics still, and, although oh. This is, you know, impressive, I think.
Yeah.
It does kind of point to a time when this could... you know, be absolutely replace, I think, a biological pet, I would say.
Yeah, and again, there could be reasons to have something like this, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, to go back to that early point about at least financially, you really aren't spending that much more than you would on a dog. And depending upon where you get the dog from, they can be kind of expensive.
Yeah, I'm just
looking. The adoption variety, which you should go through, as I will say, since both of my dogs and two of my cats were adopted. You know,
is it very expensive to do that way?
No, that's pretty cheap.
Yeah.
There may be an inspection and you know, a check over and everything, but it was a fairly inexpensive process. So you know, yeah, it'll be interesting. Like you said, I'm sure that things will improve from there.
I mean, yes, if they can eventually start making robotic dogs with it more. I mean, a big problem with this is that it's not, like, fuzzy or, like, you know...
it looks like a robot.
Yeah, it's like a hard kind of shell to it.
Right.
It is, I mean, kind of cute looking, but I feel like they could, like, soften it up quite a bit. I think that would...
We've definitely seen a lot of, like, rubber robots, I feel like, recently, and there's some type of technology I think that they could use maybe on the outside of that to... make it feel a little softer, or just attach a plastic skin that carries the hair.
Yeah. I think that would be better. So, Sony, if you're listening out there, put some fur on this dog. I mean, dogs have fur, usually.
come on, people, get it together. If you're going to go with the robot in 2018, 1999, it was easy to let the no fur thing slide.
Right. We could allow that to happen.
Yeah. 19 years later, we cannot let that go now.
It's 2018, you know, dogs have fur now.
Yeah. Well, do you think now that pilots have more experience, say, than just playing a video game to become a pilot?
You know what, Kevin? Normally I would say that they would need more experience than just playing video games to decide to be able to fly a commercial jet. Yes.
Yeah, that really seems like an insanely low bar to cross. But this was maybe the craziest of the heist stories that we've done.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. Well, we'll talk about it later, but I'm going to have to give some thought to how I would rate this particular heist.
Yeah, because it is very strange to me that...
This is Heist Corner, by the way.
Yeah. Well, no. Did this even happen, I guess? I can't believe that Horizon Air, and I'm trying to think of which part of... oh, yeah, because it was up in the Seattle area, because they said Puget Sound.
Yeah, I believe it was near Tacoma, maybe. Or it was Seattle Tacoma International Airport, so somewhere in that area.
Yeah. He was part of the grounds crew.
Right. So he worked at the airport, but then was not a pilot. Didn't have a pilot's license. And the grounds crew worker told air traffic control agents that he played some video games.
Well, but this comes after he was in the cockpit and taxiing down the runway. I believe that took place after he was in the air.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
Well, his duties as the part of ground service was loading and unloading baggage, tidying planes, and towing. He used a tractor to move the... 76 seat plane 180 degrees before taxiing to the runway when air traffic controller repeatedly asked him to identify himself. So that's interesting. He turned around with the tractor and then got in the plane and started to take off. After he was airborne, the air traffic controllers were calm and patient as they tried to keep him away from populated areas and arriving planes. I mean, can you imagine having this job as an air traffic controller? Like, holy crap, man.
For this one...
You've got so much going on.
This one in particular, you've got to be a little extra stressed out in this situation. Because, I mean, you have a giant projectile that someone is controlling now.
Yeah, but you've got to try to keep it away from, you know, crashing into people, basically. Either in planes or on the ground.
Oh, right. And it does sound like, I mean, it's kind of crazy how, I'm trying to think of what the number is. Just the number of flights in the U.S. a day is just pretty crazy at how they coordinate not running into anyone.
Yeah, that's... Mm.
You know, like, it's that's a real group effort.
And when you add someone who doesn't really understand, like, it'd be like having someone on the highway not knowing, you know, what lanes are to be in or, you know, where they should be, which direction they should be traveling on the road, you know? So I think that would be pretty dangerous. Luckily, I guess he was the only one who really didn't make it out from this incident.
Yeah, that was, maybe the, quote unquote silver lining, in this one. I would imagine that the company, there is obviously not a whole lot of recourse that they are going to get for a wrecked plane.
Well, I wonder if they'd even be able to like claim this for insurance. Like,
oh, that, and they were at least at this point, I believe there has not been an update on the black box, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I did a little search before we started recording and wasn't able to find anything in terms of news for this guy. So,
yeah, he certainly, at least the way the article read, there was definitely a hint of the fact that this guy wanted to end his life.
Yes.
And that this was the way he chose to do it.
Yes.
And certainly even with the communication that he had with the air traffic controllers, yeah. Or sometimes even the non-communication.
Well, at one point he said that he really wasn't planning on landing it. So that is a pretty big clue there. But yeah. he said he knew how to put the landing gear down, but also seemed to struggle at times with understanding what they were trying to tell him. Thing like I have no idea what that all that means, and then worrying about his fuel supply running out. So yeah, but a captain from another airline also said that his maneuvers were impressive, and that even starting the plane's engine is complex, a process that includes a series of commands, and getting one wrong would stop the engines from starting up.
That part is pretty crazy that the guy got all of that correct somehow. Either studied it enough,
yes.
You know, I would have maybe imagined in the video game, but, yeah, I would imagine that flying, the actual plane though would, differ from using a remote control.
Yeah.
You can say that you're compensating for wind in a video game, but it's another thing to experience the wind and compensate for it.
Yeah. I mean, it's you would think that there's a lot more subtleties involved in actually flying a plane versus just flying from a video game. Even if you're using like a reproduction of the actual controllers, which I know some people who get really into this kind of stuff are, you know, able to do. But
I did have a coworker who I'm not quite sure he was to that point, but he would do some pretty crazy stuff. Like he would follow a sim game, and if they told him he wasn't cleared for takeoff, he'd just wait there.
Wait, what?
There was part of a game where it was supposedly somewhat realistic. So there were times where you'd have to wait for takeoff, like within the video game itself. So he'd just wait. Like, I guess there was a way to enable speeding that up, but he just figured if he was kind of flying like he was really flying, he just would wait it out because there was no way to hit fast forward and, you know, in real life.
Oh, wow.
Now that's... Yeah, that's, it was pretty hardcore.
Wait, now this is reminding me of something. Wasn't there like, do you remember this? There being a spy role playing game that like you would play with your brother sometimes?
Yeah, Top Secret.
Top Secret, that's right. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but if in the game you guys would have to take a flight from one location to another and it took a certain amount of hours, you would have to like wait that actual time while the flight was happening.
Oh yeah, I do think that was kind of encouraged, maybe.
Huh, that seems insane.
It's been a while, so I'm pretty little rusty on those rules exactly, but
I cannot believe that a game would actually want you to wait.
Well, yeah, and I'm not quite sure why we'd ever obey that too. Like that's what I'm sitting here thinking to myself, like all the other stuff that we'd blow off when we saw a rule like that, why the fuck would we wait for that though? Like, but I'm thinking that you're correct, though, that we would indeed wait for such things to happen and pick up the game at some later time after they got there. So, like, I'm feeling like you're right, but I'm not 100% sure either.
That's crazy. I would want to get some confirmation, too, because maybe talk to your brothers
and figure that one out. I'd have to Well, it would only be Ron in that situation. Brian was not really involved. It was the great Dungeons and Dragons satanic cult phase of life was definitely more involved with my older brother than my younger brother.
Yeah.
Dungeons and Dragons was still probably not popular by the time Brian was playing, but it also at least was not satanic at that point.
I feel like that maybe Top Secret was a ploy to move away from the pure satanic influence of Dungeons and Dragons.
Well, into and a who doesn't
slightly more acceptable realm of espionage? I guess
everyone loves James Bond.
James Bond, yeah, that's true. Spying,
yeah. So everyone thinks it's a little more safe. I mean, I guess it's better than whatever it was. That we had, like, the 9 clones in it that that you and I played.
Oh, Paranoia.
Paranoia, yeah.
Yeah, my brother was the dungeon master on that one, or the game master in that case, yeah. Yeah, I remember Ron was the spy master, or whatever they called it.
He was Q.
Yeah. The top secret game. But, anyway, this guy,
yeah, I would not try to be a real spy just because I played Top Secret.
And this was really kind of a chilling quote, I guess, to me, where he said that he wanted to apologize for everybody, first of all, and then he said he was just a broken guy, just got a few screws loose, I guess, never really knew it until now, just before the recording ends. And it's like, I don't know. Do you think that you could find yourself in that kind of situation and not realize that you had something going on mentally?
I don't know if maybe even if you're committed to it, that some clarity might come at that moment, kind of knowing that death is imminent.
Mm-hmm. You might hope it would kick in before you got in the plane, I guess.
This guy really obviously committed to it. I guess it just sucks for the guy, obviously, you know, that he didn't get the help that he needed. I would think that he was at least making half decent money if he was working at a major airport for a somewhat major airline.
Yeah, I don't know.
I guess I don't know either. And of course, just making money, I guess that's been proven quite false here just this year alone with suicides. That does not solve all of the problems in the world.
No, far from it. And, I think it can be expensive for people to get, treatment for mental health. Sometimes it's not covered by their insurance, or they have to go through extra rigmaroles or things. So,
maybe they just plain don't think they need it.
Yeah. That's what I was wondering in this case. I mean, it sounds like he maybe wasn't aware that he was having a problem even. So, I don't know. That's kind of a freaky, thing to think about for me. A little scary, I guess, that you could be going crazy without knowing it.
Well, and just to have...
crazy is probably the wrong way to say it, but...
I guess I was going to go with... in a lot of ways, they were lucky that he only hurt himself in this situation. I mean, even without trying, if you tried to land this in a city somewhere... Even if it was a small town, you're probably going to take other people with you.
Right.
You know, I know that you can do that with a car, obviously. But that's just a larger weapon.
Yeah, I'm not sure what he must have liked the idea of flying a plane, and it seemed like he spent some time, playing the simulator software and things. But I guess that's why he decided that would be the way for him to go. But I guess we're putting this into our heist category, Kevin, and we.
Yeah, it is definitely a grim one in the heist series here, because
It was
yeah,
it.
you don't want to see anything stolen, but you also don't want to see anyone dead at the end of the story either.
No, but at the same time, there was at least another airline captain who thought that the maneuvers he pulled off were impressive. So, in some sort of perverse way, I think you have to at least acknowledge that this was, in a way, impressive, I guess.
Yeah, I mean
Or at least you could.
he got the plane up and flying, which I know that I would not be capable of doing.
Yeah.
So there is that. He definitely learned enough to get himself aerial. Unfortunately, did not learn enough to land himself in a safe manner,
Yeah.
intentionally or not.
Right. So I think I'm gonna have to probably give this one a 4, Kevin.
Yeah, I will have to put this one at the bottom of the pile.
Yep.
Not as fun as the other ones.
No.
And we like to do fun here on the show.
Yeah, but occasionally stuff that makes you think and stuff that has consequences for people. There was another story, Kevin, about a different, probably, I would say definitely lesser set of consequences, but consequences nonetheless for a Florida security guard.
Yes, because everything that happens in the United States happens in Florida.
Yes, the weirdest stuff seems to happen in Florida. Now, I know I tried to, or at least half-heartedly debunk this theory because it's supposedly based on the public records laws that they have in Florida. But this has nothing to do with public records laws. It's just people may have heard about this, so it kind of was a little bit, it made a blip in the news, I feel like. Instagram account under the name Paul Flart. Of course, Paul Blart was a mall cop in the Kevin James. Was that more than one movie? Was that a series of
Yeah,
movies?
I believe there is at least two.
God help us all.
Nope,
I haven't seen them, but
I haven't seen either one myself.
he played a mall cop in those movies. And this was a. I don't know if he was a mall cop, but he was a
He was
security
a
guard.
security
Oh,
for a
at a
hospital.
hospital. And kind of riffing on that, he called himself Paul Flart. And also further ripping on toots that are coming out of his butt, Kevin, to put it politely.
Yes, he recorded the sound of his flatulence.
And video of his, just his face as these were occurring.
Yeah, this is one where I know I get a little bit of warning sometimes before one, but to pull out your phone and set up record and then let it go, I don't know if I can fart on command that much.
Right.
Especially, he definitely delivered. We listened to some of his catalog before starting the show.
Right. Yeah. We went back a ways. We went to listen to some of his old stuff.
Some of his new stuff,
Yeah.
some of his got fired stuff, which we can get to later. But yeah, I mean, he did this for six months, so I mean, he had a lot of material. And as the article noted, the room happened to have a high ceiling, and the acoustics were quite loud.
Yes,
which helped amplify the farting sounds.
Well, I believe that is what drew him to starting the farting in the first place. The acoustics in that room being quite echoey. And the lighting, I would say, is not bad either, which probably helps the, you know, his videos get more traction, I would think.
Yeah, well, there's the light, there's his hairdo, his creepy porno mustache.
Right, yes. He's not not a small man by any means.
No.
So, yeah, he has quite an image, and it doesn't hurt that he's wearing a security guard uniform either, you know? That kind of, like, adds an extra layer, I would think, of comedy to the undertaking there.
Yeah, I'm not sure if an office worker with a tie on would get the same reaction.
No.
Necessarily for committing this type of, committing to this type of Instagram account.
Because it's not as, like, for some reason, I think a security guard, you know, especially an overweight security guard with a strange mustache, is just somehow stereotypically seems like a farter.
Yes. I would have to say that a heavier weight certainly seems to go hand in hand with farting acumen.
Although, come to think of it, if it was just like a heavier person at like a desk wearing a suit and tie farting, it might still work, but I feel like it still wouldn't be quite as good as the idea of a security guard, because part of like the idea too that like that is his job, just sitting there, and he's just gonna pull out his phone and, you know, record himself when he's gonna let one rip.
Well, and he's out in the open too. With an office job, you might be able to say that they were in their office and no one's hearing it.
Mm.
The possibility that someone may come into, you know, Paul Flart definitely has more of a, the possibility that someone walks in on him. Again, if you're just recording it in your office, whatever, fart away, I guess. It'd still be kind of weird, I guess.
It would be. It would also be weird to me that you're like supposedly doing other things when you're sitting at your desk, that you would have like the time and wherewithal to like realize that you're about to fart, pull out your phone, like say as you're like typing an email and being like, oh, wait a minute, I got to record this. You know,
I think we have an open office atmosphere, and like, I don't like farting in general when I'm there. And if I do, like, I really try to make sure I squeeze that thing into my chair and release it as slow as possible so that it doesn't make as much, like, I want to minimize the noise.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, a slow leaker is the best thing that you can do. No one sits close enough to me to really catch a whiff.
That's good. You may be poisoning your chair cushion, but you're sparing your fellow office mates, which is good.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Paul Flart was not worried about the people he was protecting in the hospital.
No.
They could have gotten a disease from his farts.
I guess technically they could. I believe there are little parts of, you know, feces and all that good stuff that come out with, I mean, microscopically, of course.
Right.
But in theory, could there be a little bit of germ in there that gets onto somebody and it makes them sick? Who's to say, Kevin? It's possible.
Yeah, we would have to bring on a scientist.
A scientist, yes.
Yep. So we'd have to bring someone on to answer that question. I do believe that that would be an answerable question.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. So we might have to contact our scientist friends to see if we can't get...
do a little more research and get back to you.
Yes, exactly. But it is a possibility, and I think making it, you know, for these reasons also that we talked about, I think it has to be a security guard who does this kind of video.
Yeah, it definitely helps the ambiance of the video.
Now, sadly, Kevin, we have, you know, of course, bad news to come along with the story that he was let go by his employer.
I said it 6 months. Evidently, someone found out about this account.
Someone in his boss. And a lot of people were pretty pissed off, it seemed like.
Yeah, because wasn't it like 75,000 views or something like that? Some of his farts at the end were getting?
Oh, no, they were getting like hundreds of thousands of views.
Oh, 750,000 views?
There might
have been. Or is it 7.5 million views?
I don't think it was that many. I think it was more of the lines of like a few hundred thousand views.
Okay.
From what I could tell. I was flipping, as I said, we were flipping through his catalog. On Instagram.
Yeah, I mean, that's a large following to get, and I guess the inevitability of that blowing back on you.
Oh, shit.
you know, the more popular you get, the more likely that is to happen.
Yeah, you gotta expect some blowback from this, I would say. and yeah, there's a video. He did a live stream. I guess he knew his boss was gonna fire him. And he live streamed it from his phone while it was going on. Something that would have seemed strange to us in our days of youth, Kevin. But now it's the sort of thing that people do in this day and age.
Well, I can honestly say I never got fired, so... I would not need to have worried about live streaming that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I was definitely laid off, and I can't imagine like thinking that I would bring out my phone and
start recording
it. Yeah, that would be pretty weird.
Yeah, I still would not do that to this day, even though I have the capability. Like, I'm still kind of mad at myself that I did not tape my good friend Steve Williams freaking out over the possibility of Okada losing to Marty Scurll at All In. He was completely losing his mind. And it was one of those things that recording that would have been, like, the perfect thing to do in that moment. Like, that's why we have cameras now on our phones, is to record people doing stupid shit. And he was doing something stupid, and I completely missed it.
It would have been, you know, viral gold, do you think?
I think that viral gold would have happened there. At least on wrestling Twitter, it would have been viral gold.
I guess I could see that. I mean, I'm trying to imagine what he's doing to freak out, but, you know... I could see people being enjoying seeing someone freaking out.
Yeah, he was just motherfucking everything at that point. Which made things quite amusing. But yeah, I guess I still go back to... this guy is not going to make a living off of farting.
Yeah, and as we were going through his oeuvre on Instagram... Some of his more recent offerings were seemingly getting less views than the more of his primetime work. And I don't know if it has anything to do with not being employed by the... so he's not technically a security guard anymore. Although he does have like his own little logo and badge that he wears now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've got to kind of recreate things at that point. Because, again, you and I agree with you, that's part of the what enamors you to the situation is the security guard outfit.
Yes.
So.
And possibly the reason that his viewership has been down is that they needed to actually to know that, that he really was a security guard while this was happening, I would say.
Yeah. I again, it goes back to the scene of the so-called crime, since he did not actually commit a crime here. But, you know...
Certainly an indiscretion.
Yeah, the indiscretion is taking place in a very public setting. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the draw. So, yeah, just farting at home, or, again, going back to the office person, just farting in your office, there might be something to it once, especially if it sounds really bad, but... Doing it all the time is not something that I think would draw as many viewers.
Yeah, so he, according to his boss and the paperwork that he was forced to sign, from what I could hear, they felt that he did it an unusual many amount of times he recorded himself, which was, I think, 72. So that seems like... excessive, I guess, from if I was the boss.
Well, I don't know. That's not within a 6 month time period, and if you're working 5 days a week.
Yeah. So let's figure this one out.
So
that's like 12 a month. So there's 3-4 weeks in a month, that's like 3 times a week, right? Could that be right? Mathematicians out there.
You said 12 times a month? Yeah, so it'd roughly be 3 times a week.
We're rounding things off here a little bit, but...
Yeah.
If you did 70-something, 6 times 12 is like 74, right?
Yeah.
The 72. Yeah, 72.
Right.
So then, that sounds right. Okay.
Yeah. Three times a week. I mean, I know that I fart in my office more than 3 times a week.
True, but you probably aren't recording yourself farting more than 3 times a week.
Again, I am trying to suppress this as much as humanly possible.
You're shoving that down into the seat cushion.
Or just, you know, pretend like I need to go to the bathroom, let it rip in there, and...
I've definitely done that before. I think that's a pretty neighborly thing to do under a lot of circumstances.
You know, there's a fan in there, everything works well. Yeah. You wait a second... And then you turn on the water so that it doesn't seem...
Sometimes there's air freshener in there.
Unnaturally quick that you're going in and out of there. Like, mm-hmm. Make it seem like it's a regular restroom trip.
Go through the checklist, you know. Make it the reveal.
Make sure that it's someone can hear you taking the paper towel out of the dispenser. So that you're not a heathen who doesn't dry his hands.
Well, you know, Kevin, speaking of checklists... There's a certain checklist that people who are getting married are often filling out, Kevin. This is called the wedding registry.
Yeah. And it is certainly something that I was not surprised when you sent me this one. There was the title of the article is When the Happy Couple Registers for Cash. And I will fully admit that though we did not register for cash alone, you know, my current wife is my second wife. I think we've touched on that in the show before. We both had our separate households when we came together. There was not much of a need for what one would think of as a traditional wedding registry for us. And though we are even old for the averages that they presented in this show, or in this article, because I believe they're talking about 29 for men is the new average, and 27, I believe, for women. if I was not mistaken.
Yeah, that's dead on there, Kevin.
So,
I'm impressed.
Yeah, hey, I actually read it. You know, we were definitely older than that, but I can understand that if you're 29, you've got to have some set of, or even 27, honestly, you know, you've got to have household goods for the most part, you know.
You would think so.
It's definitely a post-college age. You've lived in an apartment for at least a few years. I would think that the vast majority of people at that point have some plates and have some silverware, you know. I will say this too, though. I guess when I was 28, I did register for these, such things, yes, in the first go round. So there was definitely a difference between what happened the first time, which I was a little closer to the average, then. What happened the second go around? Mm-hmm. Because we did kind of say, oh, there are these few things, but money's cool.
Yes.
Like, we definitely threw it out there that money was completely acceptable. So it wasn't quite just saying only cash, which does change things a little bit.
Right. Because there are people that are, expressly saying that, which was interesting to me. I think that this is something that the attitudes are changing around as we kind of progress, or as time marches on, rather. Because at one point, I think this would have been considered very sketchy in a way to be like, "Why are you, you know, asking for cash for?" You know,
well,
that's kind of like your doing a business transaction or something.
And even the numbers kind of said it for this, that it's only up to like 6% are saying all cash,
mm-hmm,
which is still, I would say, quite a low number. Like, if we're getting around to 25%, I think then it's becoming pretty common.
Yes.
But again, I just from, you know, the second wedding, and I mean, it was my current wife's first wedding. So that does make the dynamic kind of one-sided in that department. But, you know, yeah, there's, you accumulate stuff, like you just kind of have to, but I am a little bit surprised that, people don't feel like they have anything to pick up.
Like, just no gifts at all?
Yeah, like, there was some stuff that was just like, yeah, our both sets of our pots and pans are getting kind of shitty right now. You know, there's just some stuff that, because you have been using it, could probably use a refresh. Yeah. Like, we put ourselves in that position. I mean, maybe it's just because both of us do a lot of cooking, where there were a lot of cooking items that is just like, yeah, we could probably use a refresh on this. That we put on a list to, you know, I think that doing it that way that we did, which was, hey, here's a short list and money's cool too. It at least gives people an option. When you go just to the money, it's just like, and you take away that option, I do think that hurts your cause. Some.
It was interesting reading this article because I hadn't known some of the history behind the practice of giving money gifts. Because it started out that the wedding gift was like the dowry, and that was where the bride's family would give to the groom different, you know, sometimes it would be money. But during the Renaissance, it would be household goods, clothing, and jewelry that were placed in a so-called hope or dowry chest that brides brought to the ceremony. So that was kind of the gift, the big gift there at the wedding. Fast forward to America in the early 20th century, and the tradition of gift-giving had gone out of style. Then the department store Marshall Fields invented the modern wedding registry in 1924, and the tradition as we know it took off from there. So,
yeah, I am not surprised that this was a promotional gimmick by a department store.
To sell more goods.
Yeah, to sell more goods. But, I mean, again, a lot of times it was very practical for you to receive these gifts at this point.
Well, there's, I think, a reason that the whole tradition started in the first place, to be able to, like, kind of give this young couple some stuff that they're going to need to, you know, to make a life together. So,
yeah,
that makes good sense. I felt like, you know, cash is better because you can kind of pool it to maybe get something like a big item that you would need, or kind of like decide where to spend it based on if things change or, you know,
I don't know.
It gives you the most flexibility.
Yeah. And I certainly do recall, I'm not sure if we used just money from, the wedding or if it was we had some money and we had, some extra money from the wedding with the first wife, that we replaced the windows in the condo with, we used at least part of that money to do that. And it is nice to, you know, if you own a place, even if it is just a condo, you know, there are certainly upgrades that can be made to your living situation that you don't really want someone to pick out from you from a wedding registry.
Right. Yeah, you don't want just, like, people kind of going willy-nilly and getting whatever they feel like.
Yeah, doing your home remodeling project and, like, the design stuff just doesn't end up matching up at all. yeah, it could get a little bit ugly if you put that in someone else's hands.
So, Kevin...
someone else's.
Now, you didn't use this service, but there are services out there now. One of them is called Honey Fund, which is kind of set up to collect these cash, you know, gifts, and sort of like, some of them will do like, they'll say like, this is for our vacation, our honeymoon, you know, so donate to help us. And that seems to motivate people in some ways to make it seem as less of a kind of crass commercial transaction to more of a like, oh, hey, you know, this is cool. Let me help you have a good time, you know, or let me put it towards your new windows. I don't know. Something, whatever kind of project, almost like a GoFundMe sort of
situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I do like it. Like, I've got to admit we have had several friends get married a little bit later in life. I mean, even my younger brother, Brian, was 30, I think, by the time he got married.
That sounds about right. That boy was tough to settle down there.
And even our good friend Tim was in his 30s. Mm-hmm. When he got married. So, I mean, known a number of people to get married. And again, like, I've given a lot of people cash myself, just knowing that it's more versatile. Like, I guess that is one of these things that it's always kind of interesting to see articles like this. And it's just like, oh, I'm completely okay with that. Because I remember talking about not a problem being a problem for some people.
Oh.
You know, like these changing social norms. Like, there are times where it doesn't dawn on me that it seems weird until I see an article written about it.
Yeah. This would be something that I feel like I've seen change over time somewhat, but it doesn't really seem like a big deal to me. Like, I think I'd be fine with it being more common. Because I know when I got married, getting cash gifts was certainly appreciated.
Yeah, I don't think anyone ever says, oh man, damn, we got more cash. Like, that is one of those wedding things that's just like, Oh, they didn't decide to get us another set of forks. Although at least usually you can put a quantity on that stuff so that people don't overbuy.
Or to get someone the three irons, per the example in the story.
Yeah, that sounded that was one in the story that I'm just like, really, man? Like, that's what you're gonna go with? And again, like that's one of those things that I would hope that that would not be on people's list of, man, this couple's getting married. I should really get them an iron.
Yep.
You know, like I don't, some people went off the rails for gifts, for us, if I'm not mistaken, but they kind of knew us and they kind of tailored the gift to us. So there's nothing wrong with going off the rails, but buying someone an iron if it's not on their registry seems a little weird to me.
Yeah, you probably think that somebody would take care of a basic thing like that if they're not putting it on the registry. I don't know.
Yeah, and they're not terribly expensive. So I always did feel like registry things were stuff that you didn't really feel like paying for either.
Right.
Oh man, but yeah, much like you, I am completely fine with the demise of having to give out gifts. But one gift that we try to give each other, Ken, when we record is beer.
That's true.
A Beltane beer.
Ding ding.
And you have supplied us with what is called Goo Goo Muck from Seven Sun Brewing, right here in the fine city of Columbus, Ohio. It's a tart India Pale Ale.
Yeah, I'd say it lives up to the name.
Yeah, it is huge grapefruit flavor, which there is a grapefruit. There is a bird picking at a grapefruit in the can art sometimes for Seven Sun is very unique, and it's very much like a painting, honestly. Like I
Yeah.
feel like this bird could be in a painting that my parents had up on their wall when I was
Yeah.
growing up.
I'd say so. It does seem like it's painted. The colors are nice, I think. It's like a crow or blackbird eating a sliced open grapefruit somehow. I don't know how the bird managed to pull that one off. But
Yeah, we are left to wonder, Ken.
yeah, we must use our
Are
imaginations.
always making you think.
Yeah. But the label definitely jumped out at me at the store. But then I saw it's from Seventh Son. Figured to give it a shot. Limited release, so I'm not sure if people are going to be able to find this one out there. But if you can, I think it was pretty good.
Yeah, it. Tart IPA is a great description because it definitely has that. There's some hoppiness in there, but there is a big grapefruit in there, which brings the tartness out in it. So pucker on up if you get a chance to try the Goo Goo Muck.
Yeah, if you're in the mood for that sort of thing, you probably can't have really more than one of these, I would think, but it's still a good beer to try out, I think.
Agreed. And with that, I'm at Frango11. That's at Gizzard33. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to us. And have a good night.
See ya.